Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gygax, and I am here with special guest Mike Karaff. He is the business agent for Region 3 out of Chicago, and he is a candidate for president. You can check out his website, karefforprez.org. That's C-A-R-E-F, the number 4, P-R-E-Z.org. Mike, did I get all that correct?
That is great. That is awesome.
All right, good deal. So let's get the plug out of the way first. Why are you here, or what are you here to promote? Aside from just generally running for president, you got a big birthday coming up.
Yeah, I guess you only turned 50 once, and I didn't know if I'd even make it this far. But to me, it's an old man, but yeah. They want to celebrate that, and so we're gonna have a big to deal. We rented the Union Hall, and it's gonna be a campaign fundraiser. It's gonna be a roast. So they're lining up. Those that know me and love me the best, I guess, are going to drag my ass through the mud. So I guess there's good material out there, and they plan on accessing all of it. And it should be a good time. And we're going to live stream it, working with a young woman who runs a company. She has different equipment and things like that. So she's going to set up the live stream for us. And so anyone that wants to see the live stream, it's $20.26. If you go to the website, careforprez.org, like you just said, you can go there and you can sign up for the live stream, and they'll send you the link. Or you can get tickets in person if you're in the Chicago area. If you want to come out in person, there'll be, you know, food, drink. It's going to be a whole, like a fancy affair out there in Chicago.
Right on. Okay, so the Union Hall is in Chicago. Where is it geographically in Chicago?
It's in the Bronzeville neighborhood, South Side, 3850 okay. South Wabash.
Right on. All right.
And everyone in Chicago knows where it's at.
Okay, that's cool. Anybody associated with letter carriers, I'm sure. Yeah. So yeah. What is the date and time?
February the 2nd, 2 weeks from today. It starts at 5 p.m.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, congratulations on turning 50. I got my own plans to do that in June of this year.
Awesome.
Yeah, dude, I'm looking forward to it. So for me, I'm going to Machu Picchu in Peru.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, doing a four-day hike. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. That'll be awesome.
Is that
awesome.
Up in the mountains?
Yes, it is. We passed through the city that the base camp, everybody goes to the city called Cusco, and that's at like 11,000 feet. And then we hike up to where Machu Picchu is, and we go through this pass. It's called Dead Woman Pass, and that's 14,000 feet. So, yeah, good thing I'm already a hiker, but it's going to be a challenge, that's for sure.
That's awesome. They got a guide and all that. I'm assuming you're not just
Yeah, that's the cool thing about it, is because ultimately, like, this is a tourist destination. It's something tourists can do. Okay. And so they have porters, and the porters carry, like, 25 pounds of your stuff. And they carry the tent and the sleeping bag and all that stuff. And so it makes it a lot easier. Yeah,
that's going to be awesome, man. Good for you.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. So your roast, this is obviously to help raise funds for your campaign for president. And that's awesome, man. What I love about you being in the leadership position is the energy that you bring, the enthusiasm. You know, I remember when the longshoremen went on strike and their union president was out in front of the press and he's like, "We'll shut this whole fucking country down if you don't come to the table." I'm like, "God damn, we need a president like that." And that's the vibe that I get from you, that no nonsense, knock their skulls in type of attitude. So it's one thing to have this persona and to have this this appearance, but tell me, like, if you were in charge of the contract negotiation this go around, tell me something like specific that you would have done differently than what Renfro did.
I think it would be night and day, and so. One thing, I don't have to speculate on this part because I made this proposal to President Renfro and to the Executive Council of the NELC. And this was in January of 2023, before we even got started with contract negotiations. And I said, look, at the very least, one thing we should be able to accomplish in this contract is the end to mandatory overtime off assignment. And coming out of the pandemic, the Postal Service has this big staffing issue, and it just, It's inherently unfair, and it hurts both sides when you force regular carriers who don't want the overtime to work overtime on a vacant assignment that the Postal Service didn't staff. We give them the full right under Article 3 to do all the hiring and the staffing and all that. And then we say, yeah, but if you don't do your job, you can just force this person who doesn't want to work to carry this route. The rural carriers is prohibited. You know, they don't have to volunteer to work on anyone else's assignment other than their own. And there was a lot of things that were in place. And so I had this proposal and I laid it out. You know, here's the reasons why we should be able to win this. And at the end, the proposal was that we take this to the Postal Service and we ask them at the start of negotiations to work with us on this issue of ending mandatory overtime. It's in their best interest as well, because one of their biggest problems in retention of employees is that,
of course,
you know, people don't like the job. And one of the problems that people don't like is the scheduling. And that's a big part of it. You know, the Article 8.1 says a regular carrier shall work their regular assignment 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And then anyway, so I had this whole proposal, laid it out, made a presentation to the executive council. And I said, we should go in there and tell the Postal Service that this is one of the things that we're going to have out of a new contract. And we want to work with you over the next 3 months, 3 month, 90 day negotiating period to get there. And President Renfro said, is this a motion to the council? And I said, well, I guess you can call it a motion. I was just trying to, you know, kind of start the discussion. Right. And he said, okay, if it's a motion, I'll ask for a second. And there was not a second in the room.
Oh,
and
my
I was shocked.
God.
I was like, what? Like, you wow. guys, you got to get in. And I forget, because after that, it, you know, it didn't go no further. And then we had kind of like a go around later, maybe an hour later or something. And I forget exactly what I said, but I was like, I think I called him out of touch. Or I said, look, you guys, this is a huge issue for our members. And I remember President Renfro, he said, we don't conduct negotiations like that. We don't make demands. And I'm like,
no, apparently,
not?
Yeah, sure enough, he was right.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you got to start off the negotiation by making demands. And the second big thing that it would have to be is it should be transparent. And there's a lot of reasons why it should be transparent. Not in the least of is that it helps your bargaining position, because you go in there, you tell the Postal Service, look, I can't sell this bullshit to my members. You're going right. to have to do better.
Yeah.
I can't explain to them why this is the best that I can get. So I got to go back and report to them the things you're telling me. And so you better up your game and up what you're offering us, because otherwise I can't go back with a straight face and tell the members of the union that this is all that you're offering on any aspect, whether it's a pay aspect or something contractual or whatever. So I think that would be the two big differences, more of a transparent type of thing. And then you got to have a bottom line, you know, and President Renfro kept changing what the bottom line was throughout
like
that period.
CCAs.
Well, yeah, the CCA, even the pay thing. He's like, you know, we're going to get I remember him saying like a 10% raise across the board. And it's like, where's the 10% raise at? You know, if you're at steps A or B, yeah, you know, you got a significant raise, but everyone else didn't get, it was a 10% before what he promised us told us. You know, 10% before we factor in general wage increases and cost limits, because keep in mind, we had fallen behind a lot of other people in the workplace throughout the pandemic, 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023. A lot of other workplaces had gotten big raises and we hadn't gotten those raises. So what President Renfro was telling us was, hey, we're going to get a 10% across the board, and then we're going to get our COLAs and our general wage increases so that we can continue kind of at that rate. But we had already fallen behind when we started negotiations, particularly since we worked through the pandemic and we never got any hazard pay or anything as a result of that. So
yeah,
I think the negotiations would have been different if I was in charge. And I tried, even though I wasn't the president, you know, I went on the Formate Arbitration podcast. You can go back and listen to it. The episode, I don't know what number it was, but it was February 19th of 2023. And I kind of laid out a strategy for collective bargaining that I thought we as a union should take. And I tried to get, you know, the members of the union, and a lot of branches submitted items to the postal record and the branch items. If you look at the April edition and the May edition in 2023, the branch items at the back of the postal record were a lot of branches attempt to say, here's what we want out of contract negotiations, you know, because the president should be advocating for the things that the members want or the members need. And How do you tell them that? You know, how do you tell them? So that was one of the ways we were trying to do that. But anyway,
Yeah. So
it
speaking
turned out the
of,
way it turned out.
yeah, ain't that the truth? Right. And obviously, if he would have been honest about it throughout the process, then the outrage that carriers had when they finally saw the end result, they would have had that early on, and he would have gotten what turned out to have been much needed feedback on the process. Yeah. So speaking of starting out behind schedule, you brought charges against Brian Renfro for his failure to be present, essentially. Can you talk a little bit about what those charges are and then tell carriers where that stands right now?
So the essence of the charges is that he was negligent during the negotiating period by not moving the thing forward and advocating in our best interest. And we don't know. The charges are just an allegation. There was over 4,000 letter carriers that signed on to the charges. I believe you signed on,
I
right?
did, yeah.
So, you know, it's like one of them et als, you know, we're the
Right.
charging party. So all of us are part of the charging party. And we'll see. I mean, the way it works is you get an investigator, and the investigator, you know, asks questions, gets documents, you know, kind of does a full report. And then it goes back to the executive council with that report. And the executive council has to determine if the charges are substantial or not. And if they are, then they go forward to a hearing, and then you vote on the results after the hearing. Where it's still hung up on is that the first step, and this is it would be funny if it wasn't so sad and true, but the first step is that the executive vice president, because the charges are against the president, the
Right.
executive vice president has to serve the charges upon the president. Now, we've given him a copy. You know, I know he has a copy of the charges, but you have to officially serve the charges via registered mail. And Paul Barnard, the executive vice president, has mailed the you know, registered envelope like 2 months ago. And it's sitting, you got tracking, it's
Right.
sitting at the local post office.
Just
And Paul
unclaimed.
is even, as it, what hasn't, it's still in the cage. It never went out for delivery. It's
That's
not
crazy.
even President Renfro refusing to accept it. It's that nobody has tried to deliver it to him.
Well, I hope you
And
got
he
your
barely,
$20 back for the registered.
yeah, I guess. But anyway, Paul has even gone over to that local post office to try to talk to that manager. So
Right.
it's crazy. I'm trying to,
That.
Paul's trying to get people that he knows in the Postal Service to
Right.
tell that postal manager that they have to deliver the registered piece. And
Right.
anyway, it'll happen. And Paul said he's ready to appoint the investigator, and we'll find out. And I don't know, man. Like I say, the essence is that you've been negligent during this time. And the question is, like, what have you been doing? Because you were telling us, you told us a lot of things. For example, in January of 2024, you told us that the sides had selected an arbitrator, Dennis Nolan, but then you never asked for dates from that arbitrator. You know, why not? Why did you
Wow.
not move that thing along? President Rolando was kind of working on the economic package while you were off on your leave of absence, while President Renfro was off on his leave of absence.
Right.
And we don't know how far did he get in his negotiations before President Renfro came back from his leave of absence. And, you know, what was on the table at that time, and where did it go from there? And, you know, he says that after 20 months of tireless negotiations, that's what's on the NELC website. And I want to know, and I think you want to know, and a lot of us want to know, what were those tireless negotiations? How
Right.
often were you meeting? You know,
Yeah.
because the
When.
longer this thing went on, it harms us. And to me, that's negligence when the president of the union does something that harms the members of the union. I can't see it no other way. Maybe we're missing something. Maybe there was a lot going on that we're just not aware of, and the investigator uncovers that. And then we say, oh, okay, I see what was going on, and we move on with our life. But if we do find out that he was not moving the thing along, and we think that's negligence, then we can go forward with the charges.
Yeah, it seems like if there were clear exonerating evidence that he would just come out with that and be like, well, obviously, this is what I was doing. Here's my receipts, here's my emails, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's not happening. I remember when Renfro came to Vegas for a wrap session and he gave this big update on contract negotiations, and he had said, like, in salary, like, oh, post office starts way over there, we start way over here. And then the post office has been slowly moving closer and closer, and we're almost together, where the hand that he held out showing the NALC side, like the post office come all the way to our side on salary, but he still wouldn't give any specifics. So I actually stood up to the microphone and asked him, like, what's the number that we're looking at, like for new hires? And this whole idea of we don't want to say what we're asking for because management will use it against us, it's fucking ludicrous. Because
It is.
that you have to tell them. He had to tell Tolino what he was asking for. And if that could be used against us to undermine our negotiations, Tolino would do that. If it got leaked and people found out, like, okay, then that's what would happen. It's idiotic. And so I said, like, look, you have to tell them what you're asking for. Why don't you tell us? And so he goes, well, it's the amount that's on table one, the starting pay on table one. And he still wouldn't say the number, but I look up table one and it's like $30 an
$30,
hour.
$30. Yeah,
Yeah, and I'm
$30.
like, oh, sweet. All right, here we are. And then we come back and we get the result, and it's $20 an hour. Essentially don't get a raise at all for CCAs. What happened? And that,
Yeah,
yeah.
and that's the question. What happened? And ironically, we brought forth the charges prior to the tentative agreement being announced because, he kept telling us that we're on the verge of either going to arbitration or getting an agreement. And it just kept going on and on and on. And then the other thing was there was a couple of resolutions that passed at the convention in Boston that he was not implementing, about having public rallies and also informing the members in a couple of different ways on the status of contract negotiations, which he wasn't doing. And it's like, you work for us, man. So
Yeah,
that
that's
was
exactly
another
right.
aspect of the charges that we wanted to address there. But then when we came, a lot of people said, let's see what comes of the tentative agreement. And that's kind of the proof is in the results, right? If you get good
Absolutely.
results, then you must have been working hard on behalf of the members. And then when you got these subpar results, more and more people were like, yeah, maybe he wasn't actually doing shit on our behalf. I don't know.
All right. So I have some questions for you because you are a business agent. And I think a lot of my listeners are kind of wondering the same thing that I am, which is in broad strokes, what does a business agent do?
Yeah, it's all of the functions of the union within that region. And so the main function of the union, well, outside the union negotiates a national contract and then we enforce the terms of the national contract. You enforce the terms through the regional offices. The business agent is responsible for contract enforcement and contract interpretation on any particular grievance. So we do a lot of training to make sure that the stewards and the local branches know how to address all of the different contractual issues. We help them out, make sure that their procedures are good, the Article 15 timelines and what is your appeal process, who do you appeal your grievances to, how do you appeal them? You make sure that they know the steps of the process and that they have training on a dish dealing with the different issues. It all the way up until arbitration, we assign arbitration advocates where necessary. We assign the DRT that are in our regions, to handle the grievances at the Step B level. And we work with the branches at the informal A and the formal A in both training and communication and collaborating on the grievances. If a decision needs to be made on a particular grievance, either how to approach it or even if we should pursue it or not pursue it, that decision should be made by the national business agent per the language in the Constitution. And then, we do organizing. The states associations used to be in charge of organizing, but now the regional offices are. So we spend a lot of our time. I got probably a guy here full time, Bill Jackson, because we our organizing includes orientations, going out to the Carrier Academy and doing the union presentation, even at the point of conversion, because we have the right under Article 17.6 to talk to the members when they're being converted from non-career to career status. And making sure they're aware of the NELC health benefit plan, but there's a lot of other stuff too that they need to be aware of. And so we spend a lot of our time, I would say on that. And then I think the third thing is making sure that the branches are operating in line with the Constitution. So there's a Constitution, NELC Constitution, then there's the governance of federal and subordinate branches. And so those branches all have bylaws, but the bylaws have to be in line with the parameters that are laid out in the government of federal and subordinate branches. So, you know, for example, you have to tell the members in your bylaws when and where the union meetings are going to be. So, you know, every time there's a member of the union that calls and they're like, I don't know when and where my meetings are, this office, the regional office of the union, should be able to tell you. Here's where, you know, your branch has bylaws, and the bylaws lay out when and where the meetings are at, to make sure that elections are being done per the bylaws, and the elections are being done fairly, so that, you know, the outcome represents the will of the members. So some of the constitutional things we get involved in as well.
Yeah, that has been an issue in my branch recently, and
Oh, I've
it would have
heard.
been nice to have the support of the business agent's office. At least in my region, a number of people have reached out to our business agent to talk about what's going on, and basically our business agent doesn't seem interested, and it's frustrating. You know,
Yeah,
it sounds.
there's different approaches, and you know, I think that, you know, that's why we have elections every 4 years, and the members in that region obviously elect their business agent, and people have different kind of approaches and philosophies. Generally, I side more on, I'm a little bit more involved in the branch's business than I think most of my colleagues are, but you know, I don't know that to be, you know, it's not an exact science. Generally speaking, I'm involved with the branch for two main reasons. One, I want to make sure that the contract is being enforced, that they're doing what they're supposed to do, and you know, they may need some help as far as strategies and things like that in the grievances. That's the first two steps, inform and formal A. The second thing I'm involved with the branch is to make sure that they're operating per the Constitution, you know, we operate like a democracy. Everyone has a right. They know when the meetings are, they know when the elections are, the nomination notice. You know, we want to make sure the nomination notice gives all the members all the information, so that if they want to run for any office, they have that right to run for any office within their branch. And so they need to know how to do that. Then they need to know how to participate in the election. Is it going to be in person? Is it going to be via mail? What about absentee ballots? You know, all of that is important, and we want to get it right the first time. Obviously, these are all decisions that the branch ends up making. But if you get it right the first time, then you don't have as much disputes and things like that going on within the branch. People don't have to go through these charges, and you know, it's better that we all kind of work together and collaborate. So
Of course.
I've always made myself available and made the people in the regional office available to assist the branch with these processes and these decision making, which, like I said, is their decision, but we need to make sure that it's being done in line with the Constitution and that it's just being done the most effective way. You know, I think most branches do want to do the right thing, or we hope they want to do the right thing, and we're going to work with them to facilitate that, right?
Right
But
on.
particularly in the grievance process, I would say it's almost unanimous that every branch wants to represent their members, whether they're doing that effectively or not. You know, that may be that's a different question, right? You know, and then you have some shenanigans as far as with elections and things like that. But for the most part, you know, we do okay with that too, I think. We could probably do better in a lot of branches.
So it sounds like all of these things that you're doing, they really boil down to leadership. You know, the training is about making sure the people who are on the team with you know what they're doing and that they can be effective. And the decision making and the making sure the people are doing the right things, that's all leadership. And honestly, Mike, that's probably my favorite thing about you is your leadership ability that you have this passion, you're the leader who is out in front and who's carrying the picket or you know, swinging that sword out in the front. And I really appreciate that about you. I appreciate that you're so vocal in standing up for the city letter carriers. And, you know, as an outsider, obviously I'm not in your region, but I'm really pleased with the way that you have been the voice for the carriers.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. And I think that's my, they asked me on the last show I was on, you know, what did I think my number one strength was? And that's what I think it is. I think it's, you know, the ability to collaborate and set up structures of organization that serve the members. And you start with a set of principles, and shit, the principles are basically laid out in the Constitution. We're a fraternal organization. We look out for each other. You know, we have a collective bargaining agreement, make sure that the terms are enforced. You know, so you start there with your principles, and then you figure out the best way of setting up a structure so that the members' needs are met there. And I don't know if it's like a, I don't know what it like is a personality thing or what, but I don't mind mixing it up, man. And I don't consider mixing it up to be negative, you know? We're gonna have some disagreements and whatever. And it's taken me 10 years up until this point, because I've been a business agent 10 years, but especially at first, man, a lot of the branches were like, dude, why are you in our business? You know, like I got in some disputes with friends, you know, and it's
Yeah, you
like
told me we had a phone conversation the other day, and you told me that there was a branch that they actually locked you out of the meeting. That's
and that
awesome.
we have about 40 branches in Region 3, and that branch to this
Yes.
day is still a branch that President Rolando ended up sending them a letter telling them that, hey, this dude's a bit, because their argument was, I'm not a member of their branch and I couldn't come to their meetings or whatever. So President Rolando ended up sending them a letter. It took a long time to get there. They had called the police on me. They had blocked the doors. It was all these things. And, you know, obviously there's members of that branch that wanted me at that meeting, but the president or the executive board didn't want me at the meeting because they don't want me in their business. And
They don't want that
so,
oversight.
yeah, exactly. And you know, specifically in the Constitution, and I'm not the kind of guy to, you know, kind of say, you know, I'm over you or whatever. And I always tell members of the union, I'm not over your branch. You are the boss in your branch. You, the members of that branch, are the boss. However, there is an oversight mechanism in the Constitution because all of the branches are subordinate branches of the NELC. We have the National Association of Letter Carriers. And when people, what really kind of pisses me off, and people will say, well, they got so and so as the president, that's who they wanted. And I'm like, okay, maybe that's who the members at that time wanted. But you have people joining the union in between elections, and they're joining the National Association of Letter Carriers. They're not joining that particular branch per se. It's just by happenstance, depending on what delivery unit you're going to be working in, that's what branch you're going to be assigned to. So all of the members haven't participated in the selection process. And even if they did, it doesn't matter because there are criteria that need to be universal. You know, just like you have universal mail delivery, there's universal things, enforcement of the contract, you know, regular meetings and elections. And there's things that a NALC branch has to do. And if you're not doing these things, you're not really an NALC branch.
Right.
You're just your own entity.
The
You know what I mean?
Constitution and the bylaws don't stop becoming effective just because somebody got elected. Those are still
Exactly.
the rules. That's
And the
exactly.
contract, the national contract, the National Association of Letter Carriers is the sole representative of all city letter carriers. It doesn't say nothing about a branch or, you know, none of that matters.
Okay, so since I have a business agent on, I want to take this opportunity. You certainly deal with cases where people have gotten fired. And so I want to ask you, in your region, what are the top couple of reasons that carriers are being fired?
Attendance is always number one. We're actually dealing with so many issues of mishandling the mail, whether it be theft of the mail or not delivering the mail or whatever. And it's so frustrating because the Postal Service, you know, so you start at the beginning, the hiring, right? And they have this horrible hiring process. And basically, part of it is the pay, the benefits, the scheduling. You know, like it's not a desirable job. You're not getting a lot of quality applicants. But even
I want to
within that,
interrupt
the
for just a
applicants.
sec. Hold on for just a sec, because when I meant to ask you about this, like when I got hired in 2006, I came in, I was going to school to be a high school science teacher. And when I got hired at the post office in 2006 as a PTF, my first year, I earned literally double what I would have earned as a first year high school science teacher. Teacher pay in Nevada is terrible. But I came in and I stayed because it was such a good job. I came in as a PTF. I had my career benefits right off the bat. And tell me about when you started. We'll get back to this firing in just a sec. But like when you started, what was the situation for new hires?
Yeah, I mean, my experience was I worked at a steel factory. I was running the crane in a machine shop at A. Finkel and Sons, a steel factory in Chicago. And I was making like nine something an hour. And one of the guys that, you know, ran the cranes with me, he was like, I'm gonna apply for the post office. And back then we used to take that 473 battery test.
Oh,
And so
yeah.
he would bring the test and we sit there like in breaks and he'd show me the book. And so we were kind of studying together. And then I went and applied anyway. The post office, or the letter carrier position at that time paid like 12 something. So it was a significant increase.
Yeah.
But in addition to the pay, obviously, some of this stuff is still there, but the leave and the retirement and
Right.
just and you had a lot of your raises were front loaded. You used to get a couple of really big ass raises, in the beginning. So, within the first 3 or 4 years, for sure, you were solidly in the middle class.
Right.
And then after that, once they kind of roped you in, then they'd give you all these little incremental raises,
Right,
cost of
right.
living and this and that. So your pay
Yeah.
was constantly going up and you were kind
Right.
of keeping up with inflation. We weren't like jumping ahead so much. We weren't getting huge raises, but you were moving up the ladder a little bit there. And that's just not the
Yeah.
situation
That's what draws
anymore,
in
man.
good candidates. Good candidates like you and me. And then
So the post
keeps
office,
it.
they just hire people, and there's even people that come into the postal service for the sole purpose of stealing from the mail.
Wow.
They're like, let me get in on the inside. I'll have access to people's credit cards coming through the mail, et cetera, et cetera. There's all type of stories of people stealing credit cards and selling them for a certain amount, this and that, right?
Wow.
So there's this problem out there that we've been dealing with for the past probably 3, 4 years. And I don't even know if I should be saying this, but I've been telling the Postal Service, if you think someone is stealing or you have evidence that they're stealing, what you need to do is issue them a notice of removal. Not to say we won't file a grievance, but
Right.
there is such a thing as justified discipline.
Yeah.
And if you have a criteria, it's not an unreasonable rule that, you can't steal from us or steal from the postal patrons in order to be an employee. And you start applying the test of just cause and you say, is there a rule? Yeah. Is the rule reasonable? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the rule equitably enforced? Yeah. Every time we find out about someone stealing, we issue them a notice of removal. Is the disciplinary action issued as promptly as possible after the offense was committed? Now there's where they start falling apart,
Right.
And they do this weird thing, normally because the OIG or the Postal Inspection Service wants to either catch them doing something else, or they're trying to find out who the ring is, and so they're leaving them out there sometimes, or
Right.
sometimes they'll put them on emergency placement, which the Postal Service thinks is not discipline, and it is. And so you can put someone out on admin leave, like how you have an issue, like let's say in the police department. Oh, we're going to give you
Right.
desk duties or
Yeah,
whatever.
yeah.
You can do that under the terms of the contract and put them in admin leave status while you're investigating. But as soon as they put them in an off-duty, off-pay status,
Yeah,
now
that's
you're
discipline.
violating the contract because now that's discipline and you have to justify the discipline and they're not doing that. So that'll drag on usually for a few months. And then they come back later and they say, yeah, we're going to issue a notice removal. And I say, the problem is now you're not being fair to the employee because
Right.
basic fairness requires you to have a rule to inform them of the rule and just apply that rule by issuing a discipline, which is normally corrective. But if it's something like stealing and you feel like the bond has been broken between the employer and employee, then you're allowed to take action as long as you're fair about it.
Right,
But
right.
dragging them along, put them in a non-pay status improperly, and dragging that thing on for months is not proper under our contract. And I have to enforce, and I want to enforce the terms of the contract for everybody. And I'm
Yep.
like, I didn't hire this person. You hired this person. And
Right.
once you hire that person, I'm going to make sure that they're protected under the terms of our contract. That doesn't handcuff you. That just means that you got to do something that is so unknown to you, and that is treat the person fairly.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's not unfair to tell someone, yeah, you can't work here.
And so
That's not unfair.
with these low
Anyway.
quality candidates, it's almost like the post office doesn't seem to realize that they're harming themselves by keeping the entry pay and conditions so bad. They're bringing in these low quality candidates. So to get back to people getting fired, I kind of want to focus on that number one that you said, which is attendance.
Attendance.
Yeah. So do you see any consistently enforced thresholds or any patterns with how these people are getting fired?
No, and the reason is because the Postal Service doesn't know how to manage or Like I say, be
You
fair
don't
with the
say.
employee. So a lot of times they need to bring in somebody from the outside to enforce basic attendance rules. And that's always problematic in Article 16 because it's inherently not fair that my supervisor, who knows I haven't been coming to work, didn't do anything about it, didn't say anything, didn't, you have to give someone a chance to correct their behavior. So if you think it's not like we have a big problem on Saturdays, I'm not coming to work on Saturday, really. But if your supervisor has a problem with you not coming to work on Saturday, we have a process for that, man. You got 513 of the M, you got 3972, you got job discussions, you got letters of warning, you got all these things, and the supervisor is normally not doing those things. A lot of times, there's not even a 3971. They're not even letting the person know that this is an unscheduled absence, and so. That letter carrier is kind of going about their business. And what I keep telling the Postal Service is, look, if you're not going to have, if that is going to be acceptable attendance to you, if someone coming to work, for example, half the time is acceptable to you, then you need to hire more letter carriers. I mean, I don't care if that's what you want. You're the employer. You want that to be your standard. If I was running the company, that wouldn't be my standard. But, if that's your standard, just come to work whenever the hell you feel like it. If that's what your standard is, then you have to hire more people as a result of that. It's just on a side note, I think that with the FMLA law and some of the other laws that allow people to be off work more, which is great, I think the Postal Service needs to revise their complement a little bit. I
Yeah, of
think that
course.
they're constantly undercounting how many letter carriers they need. And they're constantly saying, oh, we're fully staffed over there. And I said, how are you fully staffed if you're using penalty overtime and mandatory overtime? How could you possibly be fully staffed? It doesn't add up. And I think a lot of times the numbers are bad. And a lot of times they think at headquarters they have one attendance policy, when in reality, a lot of times the attendance policy is simply come to work when you feel like it at the local office. And then they'll send someone in from outside, attendance czar or whatever, and they'll start issuing discipline or whatever. And we file agreements. We're like, hey, that's not fair. You can't come back 6 months later and tell this person that all of their absences are a problem, when at the time you never told them it was a problem and gave them a chance to correct it. So we win a huge, I want to say, I don't want to throw out a number, but we win a ton of disciplinary actions in the grievance process. And I don't apologize for it. I think that the company has to be take responsibility for for what they're responsible for, and what we've given them under our contract, under Article 3, we've given them that responsibility and that obligation, and they're just not fulfilling it.
And the ELM lays out the process for which by which management can handle this with, talk to the carrier. If it comes down to it, you think they're abusing sick leave, there's a process to put them on restricted sick leave so that they know that they're on notice. And if management doesn't do these basic tasks, that's on management. So what
And
advice
then the
would you
next
give?
question is, what are they there for, right? You tell us you don't have any money to give us a raise. Well, what do you have all these managers for? They can't even do the basic parts of their half of the M39 is about route count inspections, and they almost have no managers or supervisors that can do route count inspections. What do you have them there for? They don't know the basic functions of their job.
Just like the management never gives carriers the time to sit down and read through the M41. They don't give themselves time to sit down and read the M39 or the ELM, or they're as poorly trained, maybe worse trained than anybody else. So what advice would you give to carriers to stay off of that shit list to avoid being fired for absences? I mean, aside from the obvious of welcome to work.
Well, one thing carriers can do, I think, is to try to schedule their absences in advance to the extent possible. And I think sometimes we're really lazy with that, and we just I'm just going to call off. Even there's issues where I like, let's say you're scheduled to work on an NS day, and sometimes it could be proper, sometimes it could be improper. But whether it's proper or not, you should still inform your supervisor that you're not coming to work. And people will say, well, I can't call off on an NS day, or they'll just, call off will be your kind of default. And really, that needs to be for emergency situations. Every absence that you're aware of in advance, you should inform and communicate that via the PS Form 3971, which, is notification and or request for an absence. And if it's just a notification that I won't be here, even if you're not requesting leave, that's fine. That's still part of the 3971 process. And then whenever you do have an absence, if it's unscheduled and you come back to work, fill out the 3971. If your request is for sick leave or your request is for annual leave or whatever it is, you should make it clear what even continuation of pay. I mean, I know when you fill out a CA-1, you're injured. You're going to check in the e-comp, you're going to say, I'm requesting continuation of pay. But I always recommend still use the 3971. You go to the doctor says, you cannot work due to the injury. Come back and see me in 2 weeks. Fill out the 3971 for the 2 weeks, then go to the doctor and see where you're at, and that kind of thing. So that's one thing I think that everyone can do to help that situation out a little bit.
There you go, guys. You heard it right from the business agent. Fill out your own 3971 when you return to work, or especially if you know in advance. Yeah, I've defended carriers for attendance, and their defense is, well, I had a doctor's appointment. I had to go. I'm like,
Right.
yeah, dude, it's an appointment. You knew that was coming. All you got to
Exactly.
do is fill this out in advance. And I always tell them there's a little box on there that says approved in advance. Check yes, and then you're
Right.
golden.
Yep. And the other thing about a doctor's appointment, when you have an appointment or something on your NS day, we have a lot of these mandatory overtime issues. Just tell them I have an appointment at 1 o'clock or whatever it is. Whatever you have to do that day. Once you tell them and they still schedule you got an 8-hour guarantee. I told you I got to leave at one. When I leave at one, you're still paying me 8 hours.
Because you
That
have to be
put a
available
stop
to
to some of
work.
that.
Yep, that's exactly right. That's awesome. Okay, so before I let you get out of here, I got one more thing. You are running for president on a reform ticket, a reform platform, I should say, and reform at the national level. From the top to the bottom, the union needs reform. We have a problem with good old boy networks. We have a problem with these insular, the people who are already in power being separated from what goes on in the workroom floor. So you have your reform platform at the national level. What advice do you have for carriers who are trying to reform things at the local level?
The main thing is get involved, and the main thing, and it's hard for a lot of our people, man, but you got to rely on your brothers and sisters. That's how you make change. You get together with a group and you go about it honestly, and you say, here's my involvement, here's what I think. And I think that hopefully, and this is one thing that we can change, is that hopefully the NELC structure is going to assist you. In other words, if in your particular branch things are not being done the way they should be done per the Constitution, the National Association of Letter Carriers and elected representatives should be assisting you. People in the regional office, headquarters, whatever. And so that's something we can accomplish hopefully in 2026. But you're still going to have to do the work, right? You're still going to have to gather your coworkers, your members of the branch. You're still going to have to effectuate that change. You're still going to have to put out your proposals and, gather your people and win an election. You're gonna have to campaign. You're gonna have to, put the work in. I don't like the system either at the local level or at the national level where we just appoint the next person into the position. I
The
think people
anointed,
should run. I think people should be accountable to the members. They should tell everyone what their ideas are, what their campaign is. They should be subject to questions and whatever. Analysis by the members, and then you have the democratic process and see what the members want. So
That's it. Yeah, I have an upcoming podcast that I'll be recording that I've been pushing for a long, and so you just came off of John Murphy's podcast, the Next Generation Letter Carriers, before coming on this one today. And one of the things that he and I always talk about is that we need to turn this into a rank and file democratic union that's led from the bottom up. But honestly, Mike, reading the bylaws, reading the Constitution, we already have a union like that. That's the way our rules are set up. That in the
I agree.
branch, the ultimate authority is the members themselves, not
I
the
agree.
president.
I agree.
Really, the issue is just one of activism and enforcement, that members have to wrest that control.
I agree, and I couldn't have said it any better because now we do have these problems still where somebody is. So you have sometimes the president or just someone like I said, someone who's playing games with the rules. And, oh, that's out of order. We're not going to call that question. And the will of the members at that particular meeting is not what is the result. But that's probably a rarity. Most of the time, the members are not participating at the meeting, or they're not making clear what their will is. A lot of times after the meeting, someone wants to talk about something. I'm like, it's right there in the meeting,
It just happened. You could have done something about
Yeah,
it.
exactly. Go ahead, man. But I think we can do a better job of making people feel comfortable, making sure that they know that it's not wrong to have an opinion. It's not wrong to make a proposal, make a motion. I talk to a lot of the new letter carriers at orientations and stuff like that, and I'm like, this is your union, So if you want the union to be doing something that it's not doing now, you go to the meeting, you make that proposal, you make that motion. You talk with your brothers and sisters, you figure out what's the best way to do it. I agree with you that the structure is there. We're not always utilizing that structure. And the people that are trying to utilize that structure are not always getting the support they should be getting from the NELC, either through the regional office or through headquarters. And you should have that. You should have that.
Awesome. Well, on the national level, Mike, I really appreciate you offering this leadership and trying to make these reforms. I think it's very important work. And if you want to support Mike, go to cariff4prez.org. That's CAREF, the number 4PREZ.org. You can buy tickets to his roast for his 50th birthday. He said that was February 2nd.
Yep,
Excellent.
February
Yep, that
2nd.
should be a good time. And Mike, thank you very much for coming on, man. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, my brother. Happy Sunday. Thanks for everything you do. I love your radio voice. And it was a pleasure to come on with you here today, my brother.
Awesome. All right, guys, catch you next time.